Morning. Welcome to the November 17th meeting of the Board of Public Works. I am Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown. Governor O'Malley has asked me to preside over the Board of Public Works today in his absence. He is currently en route, if not already, at the command center set up in Baltimore, one in Baltimore City, one in Baltimore County, to respond to the meteorological event. Still determining whether it was a tornado or not, but certainly severe winds that caused considerable damage in certain parts of the state. So the governor is on site and asked me to preside over the Board of Public Works. My only opening remarks in addition to that is it's great to be back, and it's great to be beyond November 2nd. I commend all of you. You guys were here November 3rd, you know. It's impressive. But certainly to our Marylanders that participate in the election process, congratulations to you. And as I'm sure as the governor conveyed 2 weeks ago, we are honored with the privilege to continue serving for the next 4 years and doing that in partnership with the other members of the Board of Public Works and with each and every one of you. With that, let me ask the treasurer if she has any opening remarks, and then we'll turn to the comptroller, and then we'll go into our first order of business.
Well, my first, good morning. Secondly, what a pleasure it is to have you back here as Lieutenant Governor-elect Governor.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bright day for the entire state of Maryland. Brighter here than some parts of our nation. I just wanted to say, I know there are a couple of things that are not on the agenda today of the Department of Transportation, because the department is going out, department or its components are going out to try to get better competition and better prices for major projects for the taxpayers. And I know that's a tough decision, and I thank you for it. I hope everything is okay. I know we had very severe winds. I think Peter in the Tacoma Park area, too, we had very severe winds overnight. Trees down. I don't think the damage was, from what I can tell, what it was up north in the Baltimore area. But we certainly are thinking of everybody. Scary. I remember when it happened not that long ago. All right.
Thank you, Ms. Comptroller. Thank you. It's always great to have three former members of the House of Delegates and the Board of Public Works sitting together. And you know, I have always seen Lieutenant Governor Brown as one of the most competent and just incredible gentlemen, and I applaud your re-election and the way in which you just handle the public's business. I think it's a tremendous credit to you. Delighted to have you here today.
Thank you.
And I do have, I know we have a big agenda, but I do have one issue that I want to speak about briefly. It's gained a lot of national attention recently, and it's just unfortunately come to hit home in Maryland. Several weeks ago, a 21-year-old named Courtney Spurry passed away near St. Michael's when a car she was driving crashed into two utility poles. The death obviously was absolutely heartbreaking, but really what caught my attention and raised my ire was that before the accident she'd been drinking one of those relatively new caffeinated alcoholic beverages. These are alcoholic beverages that are then infused with caffeine. The caffeine apparently masks the effects of the alcohol, deluding people into believing they're still sober and functional, far past the point of intoxication. The result is that you have people who believe they can drive, feel they can still function, while in reality their capacity for any activity is severely diminished. It's not just a Maryland issue. In Florida, we've seen someone die after drinking one of these drinks and taking over-the-counter diet pills. We've seen someone accidentally shoot themselves after consuming caffeinated alcoholic beverages. In Washington, D.C., several college students were hospitalized after drinking heavy quantities. These drinks are proving to be a clear public health and public safety threat. Several states have banned these drinks or have severely limited access to them. Even the United States Food and Drug Administration is seriously considering, as we speak, an outright ban on the product. and it's my understanding that a ruling of some sort could be issued as early as today. And while I applaud that action by the FDA and very much hope that they follow through on that, I don't want to wait for the federal regulatory process to run its due course on an issue of such time sensitivity. And it's no secret that the private sector has the ability to move faster than the federal government. This is no exception. In recent days, I've discussed my concerns about this product with leading representatives of Maryland's beverage industry, specifically the Maryland Beer Wholesalers Association and the Maryland State Licensed Beverage Association, which represents the retailers. And I'm very pleased to report that they share many of the concerns I just expressed. These two associations, along with other stakeholders of Maryland's beverage industry, have been strong partners with my office in the battle against illegal alcohol sales to minors and in advocating responsible contamination consumption of alcoholic products. So it's with that record of partnership in mind that I've asked the leadership of our state's alcohol beverage industry, specifically the Maryland Beer Wholesalers Association and the Maryland State Licensed Beverage Association, to voluntarily step up and end the distribution and sale of caffeinated alcohol beverages in Maryland. These are groups represent family-owned businesses that are extremely active and well-regarded members of our local communities. I have no doubt that they are as shocked and saddened by the recent tragic events as I am. For the sake of all Marylanders, I'm hopeful that they will act as civic leaders and good corporate citizens and get these dangerous products off the shelves as soon as possible. And I'm hopeful to have some good news to report on that front very soon. As we head into the holiday season, I urge every Marylander to redouble your efforts to ensure that you, your family members, and your friends celebrate responsibly so that our upcoming season of thanks and joy does not have a tragic end. Thank you, and appreciate you letting me say a few words on that subject. And I really want to underline that I'm pleased to find the private sector as responsive as one would think they would be. And hopefully they're going to move very quickly on the subject.
Well, thank you, Mr. Comptroller, for your interest and advocacy on this important issue that's just recently emerged across the country. And certainly I trust that your efforts will lead to improvements in Maryland, and perhaps we may need to see some work done in the legislature.
Yeah, no, that's a very good point. But as all of us know, that requires weeks of preparation and months of action, and that's appropriate. But this instance, I think we really need to...
So thanks for stepping up. Also, thanks for your kind remarks about my service, and congratulations for your election. And speaking of elections, don't you have one coming up soon?
Yes, yes. Intend to, yes.
Okay, good. I'll be out there campaigning
thank
for you.
Thank you very much.
Okay. So with that, let's turn to the Secretary's agenda.
Good morning, Lieutenant Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. We have 13 items on the Secretary's agenda. We have one report of an emergency procurement. We're prepared for your questions.
I'm a little curious to learn a little more about number 8, the used tire.
Is Mr. Tablada here from the Department of the Environment? Yes, Horacio Tablada from the Department of the Environment is here for the fiscal year 2011 scrap tire cleanup, as well as the Brandywine scrap tire cleanup.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Members of the board.
Hi, how are you? Can you just update us on where we are in terms of this project, but also statewide? Some of these stories are pretty horrible of the potential public safety and environmental health impacts.
Sure.
Very expensive to clean up, too.
Yeah, absolutely. The Brandywine, the Gardner site in Brandywine, Prince George's County, is one of the largest and oldest scrap tire cleanup that we have in the state. It took many years for us to secure legal access on the site, and finally we were able to do that, and we began our assessment of the sites. We initially went with what we thought was a smaller number of tires, like 1.5 million tires,
$1.5 million
yes.
originally.
And as we began doing the first reviews and the Board of Public Works approved back in 2006 the initial works in the, on this site. And as we began doing the cleanup, we have found that a lot of tar were buried up to 5 feet below the surface. So we come in finding out there may be up to 2 million tires or more. Because of the conditions of the tar, they're mixed with mud and dirt, and it just takes a lot more money to do the cleanup. And we're concerned for the scrap tar has the potential, you know, for fire, which is one serious matter, a public health matter, and proximity to the Patuxent River. So we're asking the board to approve the remaining ravines 4 and 5 that we're doing right now. So this will carry us through that. And then we'll be coming later next year to the board to secure the remaining funds for the cleanup of this site.
And this has been, these sites have been reviewed by the legislature.
Yes, it's in the budget books, and there was a specific legislation done several years back to the cost of this site. So it is being before the legislature in the budget books. So it's not a new site, it's a site that is taking us longer to clean up. We get secure all the appropriate permits like wetlands. We have to build access roads to the tires. It's not like an area like you can just back a truck and dump the tires in. So it's a little complex for scrap tire cleanup.
And we have to do it because the original owners, depositors, etc., are not available to go after.
Correct. The original owner is deceased. The property is now passed to the inheritors of the property. By law, they're exempt from as responsible persons. So it basically was what we call an orphan site. To protect public health and the environment, we need to do the cleanup.
What's the time frame for actually getting rid of these 2 million? What do you do with the 2 million tires?
Well, most of the tires are recycled and they go to places in... these ones are a little problematic because they're kind of not in good condition,
right,
to make tire chips and things like that. So they're going to places in Ohio where they're passed through and cleaned up and shredded and make into rubber material again. So it's not discarded in landfills because it cannot go to landfills. It has to go to... for recyclable uses, but right now these ones are maybe going out of state to be processed further.
Somewhere out there, so we don't have to worry about it, right? They can worry about it instead.
That's
always nice when there's an out there.
Uh-huh. We do have recyclers in Maryland, they do, but they deal more with the cleaner tires, the ones that from the shops.
So what's the time frame to finish it? When do you end?
It will be at least 3 more years to this project, because it's going by ravine. There are 7 ravines there, and each one is kind of like a tire cleanup by itself.
Right.
Because of different locations.
Right.
And there is
So do we have a fix on where the old discarded tires are around the state? I mean, major deposits of them.
We do have we provide this in annual report to the General Assembly. We have a list of all a list of all the sites, and this is the last major site that we have.
This is the last one.
Yes. There's one, I know it's sort of big, but it's not as large as this one in and around the county in Crownsville.
Okay, well, I mean, the thought of that stuff going into our water and going into our land a second only to it beginning to burn and polluting the air as well. It's just scary. Thanks.
Thank you.
Could someone please explain item 13?
I think Michael Francis here from the Stadium Authority. Mr. Francis, is the settlement of the advertising, behind home plate advertising issue with Mr. Angelo.
Thank you.
Good.
Good morning.
Would you like me to read the item?
Would you just introduce yourself for the record?
I am Michael Frenz, Executive Director of the Maryland Stadium Authority.
Mr. Frenz, do you have questions or you just want him to explain?
What is the item?
The item is the settlement of the home plate advertising rent revenue with the Baltimore Orioles. As you know, in 2004, the advertising panel behind home plate was built. The Maryland Stadium Authority assumed that that revenue was subject to the 25% net rent revenue contained in the lease. The Orioles disagreed, claiming that it was intended for television, and that furthermore, should they choose to, they could switch to virtual advertising and thereby pay us nothing. So in lieu of the 25%, we agreed with the Orioles to receive 18.75% for the years 2007 through 2009, and then 12.5% thereafter. The years 2004, 5, and 6 were already waived by MSA as part of the settlement agreement pertaining to the scoreboard in 2007.
So Mr. Angelos wanted to give zero, and you ended up with, what, almost $1 million?
We're getting $913,424 over 5 years, and then roughly at this rate, it's about $200,000 a year for the remaining term of the league for 10 years from 2011 on. I think it's a very good deal, and I don't think we could have gotten a better deal by going to arbitration. The only better deal we could have gotten was for them to pay us the full 25%, and given their feelings on the matter, I don't think they would have done that.
It just caught my eye because everyone else who negotiates with Mr. Angelos gets nothing. And, so I'm impressed with your
result. Oh, good. Thank you. Well, I think it really is a good outcome.
Thank you.
Any other items from the Secretary?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's see if I remember how to do this. Okay. No further questions or comments on the Secretary's agenda. Do I have a motion for approval? Moved by the Treasurer, seconded by the Comptroller. All those in favor say aye. Any opposed? Hearing none. Secretary's agenda is approved.
Well done.
Yeah. It's been a while. Next, we'll go to program open space. Good morning.
Good morning, Lieutenant Governor, Madam Treasurer, and Mr. Comptroller, Meredith Lassley. For the Department of Natural Resources, we have 9 items on the open space agenda this morning, 2 local projects, 3 Royal Legacy easements, and 4 Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program easements. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
I just wanted to commend you for bringing a really impressive package of geographically balanced projects for us. You could mention to Secretary Griffin that I think this is a really good package. I think you're protecting hundreds of acres of ecologically valuable land, but you're also investing in things that really make a difference for, in addition to the ecology, but just quality of life. And I'm referring to the Gaithersburg Handicapped Accessible Playground Equipment and the Dorchester County Swimming Pool, which I visited several times, and the infrastructure repairs there. I'm not as a swimmer, but as a observer, and you and I have chatted about that, and I appreciate these kinds of sensible and pragmatic investments. I think this shows exactly what Program Open Space is, the legislature intended it to be. And I also want to thank you for following up on another subject with my inquiry about federal funding for the CREP easements. The estimates of federal participation for the 3 CREP easements today on today's agenda are very helpful. And the other information generally provided by you about how CREP easements work particularly were helpful to me. And I note that from your briefing that the feds have contributed over $15 million towards the more than 5,400 CREP easements that were approved through 2009. And just keep up the good work.
Thank you very much. I'll pass the word along to Secretary Griffin.
Thank you. I would move favorable unless the Treasurer has questions.
No.
Okay. Moved by the Comptroller, seconded by the Treasurer. This is for the entire agenda. All those in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none. The Program Open Space agenda is approved. Now the next agenda item is the Department of Budget and Management. Good morning.
Good morning. Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, good morning. There are 11 items on the Department of Budget and Management's agenda for today. I'd like to withdraw item 6, and I'll be happy to answer any questions you may have.
I have a question about item 11.
Please.
Department of Juvenile Services.
Item 11 is a request for retroactive approval of 61 contracts for currently licensed contractors that provide residential and non-residential services for DGS youth. I think Deputy Secretary Mendez is here. And
yeah, the Secretary is here to answer questions. These are outside as coming inside.
Okay. So if we could have some
I mean, my basic question is you got contracts going back here how many years?
Some of these contracts, we've been working with them. You mean the history?
We're approving retroactively
yes.
contracts dating from as long back as when?
As long back as July 1st, 2008.
Pardon?
As far back as July 1st, 2008.
2008. 46 contracts.
Good morning.
Why? This is not the first time.
So
and you are not the first secretary
mm-hmm.
to have dealt with these situations in procurement in your agency.
That's correct, or other agencies as well. I'd first like to start out by saying that...
Right, excuse me, Mr. Secretary, mm-hmm. but right now we're looking at this agency.
Absolutely. I'd like to start out by saying there's absolutely no excuse for the delays. All these contracts should have been forwarded to the board for approval. The board's been very clear that they don't want retroactive contracts except for those which are emergencies. And I've made it extremely clear to my staff that this is unacceptable. The issue was recently brought to my attention as the result of an audit that was conducted. At the time of the audit and this finding, I immediately directed the staff to review the current practices and policies to ensure that this kind of delay would never happen again. I also directed them to move all delinquent contracts to your attention immediately. To ensure that this does not occur again, we have developed an automated system, which I'm going to give you some copies of, which other departments have done, for internally tracking and creating a dashboard listing of all contracts. The contracts are color-coded within the dashboard to flag contracts prior to them needing a renewal. We are also working closely with our partners at the Department of Budget Management to improve the processing times. Lastly, I have made some leadership changes in that unit, and there will be more. I'm very upset by this, extremely upset.
Mr. Secretary, let me just tell you
just
that.
Okay.
I just want to say I look forward to seeing what happens, and I do want to hear the rest of what you say.
Okay.
But as you know, I spent many years in the legislature.
Yes.
Chairing the budget subcommittee mm-hmm. that dealt with the Department of Juvenile Services,
mm-hmm.
and the gentleman to my left also dealt with these same mm-hmm. agencies, these same problems. A lot of agencies have a lot of problems,
mm-hmm.
but there has never been a procurement division of an agency that over time has had the same problems.
Mm-hmm.
Recurring dashboards, recurring new systems.
Mm-hmm. So, most importantly, what I'd like to say, madam, is that I want to reassure you that the delay in processing of these contracts did not cause the department or the state to incur any additional expenses. I've reviewed those. All the vendors were required to invoice the department for their per diems. The youth on each invoice had to be verified in our active assist system prior to payment. And accordingly, this delay will not interrupt the services to those youth as ordered by the court. Lastly, I'm almost...
No, I appreciate that is
one
the
more
most
sentence,
important thing.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
Lastly, I want to make it clear that this did not impact our department's ability to enforce accountability on the providers through mandatory incident reporting. In fact, 56 of the 61 contracts for existing providers, many of whom have had relationships with us for over 20 years. We've moved for standard business practices. What I want to say about this, there are no excuses for this, and as I said, I was extremely upset about it, and there will be some other changes in discipline as a result, because it was not brought to my attention. But the way that this works, so you know, is that coming through, we have the courts, have certain placements that they want to make sure that they're available for our youth, and those placements are very varied. And we try to have all those under contract, so in the event that a court orders a particular service for a youth, that we can move them to that service. Not all these are used, of course. Many of them are not even used. But it's important for us to have that inventory that's available to the judges, so that if they see a youth that has severe mental retardation, for example, and delinquency tendencies, there are specialized places that deal just with that. If they see a kid that's a sex offender that also has severe learning disabilities, that we have places that are available for that. So there are no excuses for this, and I will accept no excuses from my staff with this regard. But I do, again, want to reiterate that this did not result in delays of youth getting the placements. It did not result in us incurring any additional expenses. It did not result in us not being able to hold vendors accountable for their performance measures that are required under the contract. We do have the ability, and I think over time through the department it's been exercised more than it should, we do have the ability to enter in through purchase orders up to $25,000 on emergency procurements to get kids if it's a very specialized service. And some of these are in that category. So I understand your frustration with it. It's not half of what I was when I got the information. I was extremely upset about it. And I want to assure you that through this new system that I put in place, we'll not be back here with this again.
Is there some way we could get some periodic
anything that you want
from you about mm-hmm. where you are in? I mean, one of the problems I understand is the leadership, the programmatic leadership of your department
mm-hmm.
has a lot of very important things on its agenda,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes procurement process
mm-hmm.
is not right there at the top.
Mm-hmm.
This predates you. It predates your predecessor,
mm-hmm.
Mr. Montague.
You and I have talked about it. Yep.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And it's a very
but to be
very
popping up again.
And it's a very very small unit of people that we have that are performing this work.
So
that's again
gotta be top
not notch. An excuse, but I expect. And I've been very clear with Deputy Secretary Mendez, who's on the administrative side of our house, and I've been very clear with those people in procurement that through this dashboard system that's been established, I expect them to never come again before the Board of Public Works. And if that should happen, there would be dire consequences. That's clear to them.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
I'm really glad, Madam Treasurer, you put the spotlight on this, because it's a pet peeve of mine also,
mm-hmm.
this concept of retroactive
yes.
contracts being brought up here, because it really end runs, frankly, the Board of Public Works review process.
Absolutely.
It's often described as just administrative sloppiness, but
mm-hmm.
Here the, you know, we have $171 million worth of
mm-hmm. If they were
contracts
utilized,
before us that date back, I guess, 28 months or so. I guess my first question is for the procurement advisor, Ms. Childs. In this case, we're being asked to legitimize services that have already been delivered. What is the point here to our activities? The services have been approved. The vendors are getting paid. What would happen, for example, if the board rejected the retroactive approval? Is this simply some response to a legislative audit, or is there some real-world impact on service delivery that I'm not aware of?
Well, sir, I think the most significant consequence on these, I guess the best thing we could call them would be implied contracts, since there were no written contracts, would be if there were problems with enforcement on either the state side or the provider side. If they ever had to go to the point of going to legal enforcement of any of the requirements during those that two-year period, it would be very difficult to enforce without a written contract.
So just if I might?
Sure.
Okay. As I said, many of these vendors, and I am not making any excuses for this, it's unacceptable, but I'm just want to try to provide you with some information. Many of these vendors have been under contract with the state for in excess of 20 years. And there had been existing contracts with them. Many of these were contract renewals. And the consequences of that would be that we presently have about 531 youth statewide that are with a multitude of different kinds of providers, because we have literally hundreds and hundreds of different providers that we use in-state and out-of-state. It would have an impact on those particular youth. Of that 531, today I believe about 109 of them are out-of-state, receiving specialized care, psychiatric services, mental retardation services, locked secure placements, like what we call hardware secure placements, youth that are violent offenders that the courts have adjudicated on violent offense, and that is the number that it would impact.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you jumped back in, because my background materials with this request state, unquote, I guess these came from you,
mm-hmm.
that these contracts are being submitted retroactively as a result of an unusually lengthy process to determine the not-to-exceed amounts for contracts, as well as several vacant positions and chronic illnesses, which cause additional delays in processing the contracts. So we're sitting here, you're asking us to approve these contracts, many of them 2.5 years old, because of staffing problems.
I don't accept that.
People were out.
Yeah,
sick.
I read that, and I don't accept that. I don't accept that. I expect people to adjust resources and make sure that all the requirements of the board are met, and that's exactly what I've told the staff. I learned about this myself, I guess, about 3 or 4 weeks ago, the completion of an audit that was performed, and I've already explained how I've reacted to it.
Okay, and then I had a final question about, mm-hmm. you mentioned the fact that many of these are sole source and these services were procured non-competitively. And apparently the briefing material says that DGS Secretary and Procurement Officer have determined that two or more sources for the service are available, but that because of the absence of effective competition, it is unreasonable to expect these sources to respond to an invitation for bids.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there's a typo or something in there, but that statement seems inherently contradictory.
It does.
And
DGS or DJS?
DJS.
Okay. DJS.
And sorry if
I saw Secretary Collins over here at Brownville.
Yeah.
So again, it is not. If I might respond,
in other words, you acknowledge the potential for multiple vendors, but then conclude there's a lack of competition and go ahead and sole source it. So
there is a lack of competition among certain vendors, and I'll just pick out one in particular. The governor, through his capital plan right now, is in the process of assisting us in constructing some new secure treatment facilities in the state in order for us to avoid sending youth out of state. We have probably a handful of vendors, Mr. Comptroller, in the United States that can handle 18-year-old youth that have very violent histories, some of whom that are charged with murders and rapes and serious aggravated assaults, who the courts have ordered be placed in specialized facilities. And there are limits on those numbers of facilities that are available. Matter of fact, now we send kids, as you probably know, because you've approved those contracts in the past, far away as Minnesota and places like that for these specialized services. For the general kinds of kids, what I would call like the general delinquent kind of kid, we have a lot of competition for that. You know, a lot of group homes, a lot of treatment facilities, but there is some specialized markets where there's not a lot available to us until we create our own resources here in state, which we are doing right now.
My problem is that may very well be absolutely the case, as mm-hmm. you stated. I just have no way of evaluating that,
mm-hmm.
and being asked to, in effect, rubber stamp 61 non-competitive juvenile services contracts, a lot of which are going on 3 years old, without any kind of bid competition mm-hmm. or meaningful analysis, other than the statements that, you know, obviously I'm listening to what you have to say, but there's no way to tell, as the treasurer said, there's no way to tell whether the taxpayers are getting the best deal for the dollar and whether they're receiving good services other than your blanket comments. And so I'm probably going to vote against this contract award just to, out of a sense of protest that, this... We just see another. You may just be the latest example of a long series of these retroactive requests, but I'm fed up with it. I think we should reject this
Just to answer your question in terms of the view, under the Secretary's leadership, there was a law passed that requires a statement of need process for any further contracting with Coupons and for them to be RFP'd. The programs you have before you, the majority are programs licensed by DHR, which we contract with in order to serve our population. And as the Secretary said before, if we didn't have these contracts, you'd have 600 kids that the court have ordered to placement without any place to go. So there is a mechanism for review, and actually part of the existing contracts, we discontinued about 27 providers because we were reviewing which ones are closer to home, which ones are more effective, etc.
Okay, well, if there's something additionally that I can provide to you, as always, I'll be happy to provide that. I think I've given you what I know about it.
If my colleagues on the board, I just don't find the testimony particularly credible, and I apologize. I'm going to be voting no. I'm not sure that's worth anything, but
I feel the comptroller's pain. I mean, you heard me. Mm-hmm. I am not going to vote against them because I think they really are necessary.
The problem is they were necessary back
2 years ago or three years ago and should have been done correctly. Mm-hmm. I think it's more as much a question of the accountability of the procurement agency and process as it is of the particular vendor.
I agree. The impact of that would be those youth coming back without services.
And the fact is, we do know a number of these vendors who have been serving us
over
for a long
years,
time and have never seemed reluctant to sign contracts or to act.
Yeah, they always want to modify them and try to get a little more money and change the terms and back and forth with the lawyer.
That's
but you're
fine.
Correct.
That's the procurement process,
that's part of the
which
process.
Should be completed.
Mm-hmm. Right.
If I could just ask, Madam Treasurer, you brought that up. Isn't this a request for retroactive approval?
Mm-hmm.
So why would it impact the delivery of services?
Some of these youth are still in placement, sir.
The contracts cover, they're three-year contracts, so they cover the two past years, but then the year going forward. So
we'll just request that, bring something before us that we could approve for the year going forward, but I don't see why we should approve retroactively 2 years of services that have been paid for and delivered and for which there is no credible explanation as to why it happened, other than the statements you sent us, which don't make any sense at all.
Well, as the chairman person indicated, this would remedy having a contract in place, because if the state had to litigate any issue, there wasn't a contract. So this would kind of cure the fact that there wasn't a contract. So it's really a protection for the state to have these contracts authorized.
Okay. Is there any other discussion? We can always continue the discussion after a motion. So the treasurer moves approval, seconded by me. Any further discussion?
If I could just ask, what is the potential then for rebidding these contracts? I didn't really understand from your statement.
For the purpose of rebidding them for getting a better cost? Is that what you're saying?
Getting a better cost, getting some competition, mm-hmm. getting some review, getting some normal procedures. I mean, these obviously have a nice name to them, and they're servicing a population which is very challenging.
Yep.
But it doesn't mean we shouldn't
I will tell you this. There's little competition currently available for some of those most violent juveniles, or I wouldn't be sending them three-quarters of the way across the United States if I could find vendors that were closer to their homes. Once we have, in fact, implemented the governor's capital plan, we have three secure facilities that are in the... then we will be able to make reductions in not only the number of youth that are out of state, but in the number of vendors that we use as well. But there is little in the way of competition.
And I would add, there is a rate-setting committee, the interagency committee on the NSD, so the rates are set by them so that they get the best deal for the state. So all these contracts have a rate set by that interagency rate-setting committee.
Okay, and I appreciate the fact that we submitted. If I were you, I would rebid the contracts. I would ask for an extension of whatever it is we have currently and rebid these contracts, because otherwise we just have to sit here and rely upon your oral testimony that there is no competition. And I would much rather see the normal procurement process followed, and if at the end of it there's no competition, then you can bring that before us. But otherwise, we're just sitting here listening to your opinion.
So, just to be clear, I said there was not competition on specialized services, highly specialized services.
Well, is that what all these contracts are?
No, not all of them. But on some others, there are, in fact, and what Francis described was this new certificate of need process that is established now through both DHR, ourselves, and the Governor's Office of Children to make sure that we're doing what you said. Yeah. That we are, in fact, encouraging competition, the best vendors at the lowest possible price.
But this whole group goes through, $171 million goes through without any new rebidding, I take it. This is all just...
Well, the $171 represents if all contracts were, in fact, executed. That's not what...
If we used... that includes a year from now, and if we use all the contract amount.
Yes. Which we will not.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further questions on or comments on this item or any other items on the DBM's calendar? Okay, all those in favor say aye.
I'm going to vote against
item 11. That's right, I got to let's withdraw that motion.
Okay,
so that's a motion on item 11. Okay, so it's just item 11. I apologize for not putting that. So there's a motion for the approval of item 11. Any further discussion on item 11? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No? Okay. 2-1, that item 11 passes. Now for the remainder of the DBM calendar. Is there any further discussion on this DBM's calendar?
Yes. Yes. Item 7S, if someone could explain to me what that is.
Good morning. My name is Kevin McGuire. I'm the Executive Director of the Family Investment Administration at the Department of Human Resources. We are asking for an extension of the current contract in order to extend medical review team services so that we can perform disability determinations for people who are applying for medical assistance. We had included this item. We had been working very closely with our partners in the Department of Budget Management. This item was actually included under the original state medical director's contract. However, we received no timely bidder on this particular service. So as a result, we have to ask for an extension on this while we actually, DHR, will then submit our own procurement for this item.
Why did you, in your judgment, receive no bids?
There actually was a bid received, but it was received late. We probably would have had a contract, and we wouldn't even have been here. But apparently, on the day of the bid, the person that submitted the bid, the company that submitted the bid, submitted it about 2 hours late. Apparently, they got caught in traffic, is from what I heard. And as a result, they missed the deadline.
And is this, why, I mean, appreciate the fact someone got caught in traffic, but why weren't there, in your judgment, several bids for something like this? Is it a specialized area?
It is a specialized area. However, we still wanted to have this thing out for a competitive bid. I think what you were previously alluding in the previous item, we believe in DHR as much as possible, that we want to have these bids out for a competitive bid and see what comes back. This does give us an opportunity, once again, to put it out the bid, and hopefully we can attract more than one potential bidder on this item. It is a specialized function. It has been done actually by the same contractor for years. We have had it bid competitively in the past, and they have been the winner on it. It is to do determinations with having physicians review medical documentation from people who are claiming disability and applying for Medicaid.
Okay. And so the 5 months is the appropriate time, in your opinion?
Yes, and I'll say this. So we're actually in the process of actually getting the a new RFP out the door. Obviously, it has to be reviewed and approved. If we're able to get the thing on the street and have a bid and have it back and awarded, obviously we would terminate the current contract for convenience and start the new contract.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other discussion on the DBN's calendar? Hearing none, the comptroller moves approval, seconded by the treasurer. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those against, hearing none. The DBN agenda is approved. Let's just fast forward one item. Let's go to the Department of Information Technology. Let's take care of that. I know that Senator Pugh is here to welcome the Board of Public Works. We really appreciate your leadership in the General Assembly and your partnership with the second floor. We greatly appreciate that, Senator Pugh. And I know that you are interested in speaking to item three. Why don't you tee up item three, if you will? And then we'll have Senator Pugh speak, and then we'll take it from there.
Okay. Good morning, Lieutenant Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. Elliot Schlanger, Department of Information Technology. This morning we have three items on our agenda. We're going to move right to item 3IT, which we bring to you as a supplemental for a statewide public safety wireless communication system. We've been here before. Through the past several weeks, we've answered many questions. And so going forward, we'll be happy to take the answers or the discussions anywhere you would like to as a board.
Okay, why don't we hear from Senator
Okay.
Pugh.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor, members of the Board of Public Works. I'm here because we at the Legislative Black Caucus learned through the media some of the issues as you've been dealing with this particular contract and had a chance to talk directly with the Secretary in an open forum before the Legislative Black Caucus during Black Caucus weekend, expressed our concern about the lack of African-American involvement in this particular contract. It has further been... We have further learned that they, through various negotiations with this particular contract, have increased their participation at 7% for African Americans specifically on this particular contract. As you well know, there is a great concern by the governor as it relates to the participation of minorities in contracts. There was minority participation in this contract, but it was not of African American descent, and there were actually a number of bidders who were capable of participating in this contract. So now the currently, my understanding at 7% for the duration of this contract, and we'll seek to improve that percentage as well among those who are participating in this contract. In that spirit, we would support this contract, but more importantly, encourage them to recognize, and this agency and the state of Maryland, to recognize the importance of inclusion as it relates to minority participation. When you look at a state, for example, with a one-third African-American population, there are African-Americans who are capable of doing almost anything on any contract as it relates to the state of Maryland. Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Thank you. It's my understanding that Motorola voluntarily increased their MD participation in this case?
Yes, and when we talked with the Secretary during Legislative Black Caucus weekend, he assured us that he would be moving forward in that direction, and also that they would look for other opportunities and would look for other ways to vet these kind of opportunities throughout the state of Maryland as it relates to the inclusion of African Americans and minorities in the state of Maryland.
Well, let me just say I want to thank again you for your leadership. I also want to thank the Legislative Black Caucus, who has been appropriately vigilant on the MBE program for all minorities in the state of Maryland. And I know that you don't do it alone. You do it in collaboration and cooperation with the business community, with government stakeholders. So I really appreciate everything that that you've done so that the Legislative Black Caucus believes that this is a good result from your standpoint. Thanks for definitely letting us know.
Yeah, and you know, we're also very conscious of the fact there are a number of people around our state, and when the opportunity provides itself to be inclusive of those who are in the state of Maryland who can provide these services, we ought to pay special attention to that. Mm-hmm. And so for that, we move forward. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Pugh. Does any other members have questions or comments, either for Senator Pugh? I don't know. Do you have to run, or are you going to stay around? I know you're busy. You got some other things going on.
I've got a meeting at 11:30 in Baltimore.
You look like you have a
open
meeting.
To any questions.
So, but does any of the members have anything for Senator Pugh?
No, not for Senator Pugh.
Well, thank you very much.
I also want to thank you for your leadership in this area and in the area of financial management.
Thank
it
you.
Makes a big difference.
And thank you for your leadership as well, all of you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. So then the members of the board have questions or comments about this?
I want to make sure the board knows. We have a letter from Air Inc. I don't know if Mr. Sapitowitz is here. Just informing the board that there is a protest pending on this case by Air Inc. And we also have a letter from Mr. Iron Jolivet, who wanted to speak on this item.
Okay, so why don't we have Mr. Jolivet, who's here, speak. And good morning, Mr. Jolivet. How are you?
Good morning.
You're well.
Earl M. Jolivet, on behalf of the Maryland Minority Contractors Association. And because I did take the time to send you a letter, which I believe attempted to give you the concerns in a very detailed manner, I'm not going to take your time to rehash that, but I would like to express and like to respectfully ask this board to take the state's minority program serious. And as I stated in my letter, I think I make a very extremely strong case that there has been egregious violations by not only the procurement agency but the contractor here in terms of the way the goal was initially established. I pointed out that the procurement agency did not insert or place in the contract certain work that is part of the contract, which we have qualified African American firms who are certified at MDOT are doing. But more disturbing is that this African American firm is currently performing the identical work on a similar contract, on two similar contracts in Baltimore City and Baltimore County. But yet, when we get to the state level, we find a reason that we would exempt this work. And I would submit to this board, it's just not right. So what I've asked this board to do is to please let us do it right the first time. This is a gigantic contract. It's going to go on for what I believe 9 years. And if we, for some reason, don't get it right the first time, minority African American firms are going to be left out. And I'm really disturbed. I'm distraught how this contract has been procured. And I think that I have been on the scene with the minority program probably predating every one of you members of the board. and I have no terms of putting the minority participation together. So I'm going to ask the board in this wisdom to defer taking any action on this particular contract, because first of all, the African American firms were not even given a chance to bid, Governor. Not even, that's never done. That's unheard of. And I just think that's repulsive. And I think that we have an obligation to get it right. Get it right, to allow the agency to change the contract, to place other African American firms. That's laudable, but it still violated the spirit and intent of the rules. It's just not done. You don't allow a bidder to change their bid after the bid comes in. It's just violates basic procurement rules. So I want to still ask this board in his wisdom that to have this contract re-evaluated, and particularly the minority participation. The participation that has been represented to this board this morning is fraudulent. It's totally fraudulent. We've not independently examined it. There are firms who have been named to this contract are not going to do the work that is purported to be done. And I just think this board has the responsibility to the taxpayers to do the right thing and have it reevaluated before it's approved.
Mr. Olvek, can we have the Secretary respond to some of the points that you raised, please?
Of course. And as I said, I apologize for being distraught. But this kind of thing just upsets the tenor of our African-American community to have a $485 million contract to begin with, and African-Americans are left out altogether.
Okay.
It's just not right, Governor.
Mr. Ovid, I know. I hear you. And I mean, I've heard your points, but I need to hear from the Secretary what responses he might have to the points that you raised.
Well, thank you. Several things that I would care to say. First of all, the state has a process, as you know, in terms of setting up MBE goals. It begins with a procurement review group. It analyzes the vendors that are available to do the work in this industry. And although this occurred years ago, even prior to the creation of our department, the documentation is available to review in a transparent way. And what I would just simply say is that the laws and the processes were followed to letter law. And we got a result and a goal was set. And that goal was reviewed and approved by all the necessary parties. And the procurement was put out. And because of the complexity and the nature of the procurement, it was open for many, many months. And there was no negative feedback during that time as to the level of the goal. Firms that may be interested in subcontracting opportunities. And so we find ourselves here today, after the fact almost, saying, well, we did not get the result, perhaps, that we desire to see. And that's fair, because it's very hard to predict what's going to come down the road. But in this particular case, that sensitivity of not getting the desired outcome was shared by all. Shared by the agency, was shared by the board, shared by the vendor. And so, as you know, the vendor came forward voluntarily. He did not change his proposal. He came to the state with an improved term. He raised his MBE goal 7% to include African American participation upon the meeting and exceeding of the original MBE goal of 12% that was initially set by the procurement review group at the head of the procurement. I agree that We all learned something from this exercise, but I think in the end, it's pretty well fair to say that we're in a better position today than when we began.
Any questions or comments to the board on this? Yes,
I have a little different perspective on this. I'm concerned about this contract from a number of fiscal areas. Number one, I'm concerned that we're being asked to approve, in effect, a contract where we don't have the money. So how is this $485 million contract, if you count the options, going to be paid for when we have about $50 million that has been appropriated for it?
A general comment that I would make that in this time of recession, there is probably not one fully funded major IT project in the works. I would love to come to this board with money in the bank, so to speak, to cover every major IT project that we have, and I think we tallied up the portfolio yesterday, and it's upwards of $1 billion worth of IT projects. And the reality is, if we were to wait until, in fact, we could figure out how to fully fund everything that we had in the hopper, we wouldn't move forward at all. We wouldn't move anywhere. So what we have been doing is we have been looking to major projects as an opportunity to partition, segment, phase into logical units or packages that happen to bring value on their own. So bringing it back to the wireless interoperability project that we have here today, we recognize the fact that we cannot fully fund the project. We also understand that at some point in time, we truly want to get to cover the whole state, but we can't do that today. What we can do is we can move out on the first phase, which essentially covers approximately a third of the state in terms of the population it will serve. It's also a requirement that we have to fulfill in order to keep the 700 megahertz license that does have an expiration of January 2012. I'm fully cognizant that today we cannot identify where all the funds are going to come to build this out. But what I can tell you is that we are equipped to move out on the first phase. We have the funding to complete that, and the state will receive tremendous return on investment for that first phase.
Okay. So for the future phases that we do not have appropriations in hand for, are you planning to bring those back before the Board of Public Works?
Yes. We agree that when we have funding prior to proceeding or issuing the notice to proceed on subsequent phases, we will return to the board. Absolutely.
I applaud that. I think that's an extra layer of oversight and accountability. My second concern is that apparently we didn't realize this when we first looked at this project, that the low bidder in fact was significantly lower than the person the company you're asking us to award the contract to. ARINC, I think, came in at $306 million, which is less than the $345 million award that we're considering today for the first phase. I understand from your testimony that Motorola scored ahead of ARINC on the technical side, but that's a cost differential of almost 13%. And I guess I don't understand what technical factors there are that could have weighed in so heavily with you.
Well, you know, it's a little bit difficult to compare apples and apples based on the coverage information. So in the proposals, we asked the vendors to respond and not only tell us how, in fact, they would provide the system, but what would be the anticipated coverage, which is a measure of a percentage. If in fact they quote 94%, that means that the ability to communicate in a particular spot in the state, if you will, is 94%. In the evaluation, because in fact that we had specified that the state was interested in different coverage levels, we took a mix of those levels, and you may call that theoretical, but Motorola actually performed financially better based on that evaluation criteria. In looking at what the state can afford and the practical coverages, we happen to choose what we call the public service level. In that, if you were to compare the price of the AirInc proposal to that of Motorola, well, the comptroller is absolutely correct, it would appear that the price for public service coverage is less with the AirInc proposal. If you look at the technical coverages that the Motorola proposal offers, it is much significantly higher. And in order for AirInc to produce those same level of coverages, their proposal would have to be jacked up to be able to provide the equipment and the infrastructure to achieve that. Sorry for the long explanation, but I think you get the gist.
Then finally, I have a concern about the 15-year length of the contract, which you and I have mentioned, and I think everybody is sensitive to.
Right.
This is a sector that's subject to change every month. And in effect, we're signing up with Motorola for the next 15 years. And I don't have any problem with Motorola. Believe me, they have a stellar reputation, a lot of stature in the corporate area. I'm just wondering why, on behalf of the taxpayers, we are entering into a 15-year deal with them where apparently, obviously, they will have a leg up in providing almost every component of this, even though I guess Ericsson or someone like that might be able to figure out how their product could be offered. But let's be realistic. This is going to be a Motorola deal, and they're going to use, in all likelihood, Motorola equipment. Why would we do that, given the economic situation in the state?
Sure. One comment that I would make is, you know, in our industry, we're always faced with the problem that there's something new around the corner. There's some new, technology that is around corner. And you know, unfortunately, if we were going to wait for the next better thing to make the turn around the corner, we wouldn't do anything. So, you know, what we do is, in this particular case, we kind of establish our requirements today, and we establish our requirements for a very, very significant period going forward. Radio systems historically have a very long life, and they're built to standards that support that. So the first thing that I want to assure you is that we didn't build our requirements without considering that we were going to have to be able to use this technology for a long time, many years. And without getting into the details, the way that is done is you rely on the software, if you will, to bring you the new features that you may need, as opposed to worrying about having to replace hardware infrastructure. Speaking of hardware infrastructure, the core part of this project up front is building out that infrastructure. In the out years, we're looking more towards where can we make incremental improvements to the system. And being incremental, the cost impact is not as high. And the other thing is, but the radio units themselves. And what we have done is in the requirements, we have subscribed to standards, you know, that more than Motorola subscriber radio equipment be interoperable with the infrastructure that we're building. So in the out years, we really have a high level of flexibility, if you will, to look at other options aside from the Motorola solution. Of course, you know, I can't predict where we're going to be, but we've built the flexibility into our thinking as we go forward.
Well, and then finally, if I could just ask, apparently Aaron has now protested this contract award, and you denied the protest, and apparently it's going to the Board of Contract Appeals?
Correct.
So this is a contract that is you're asking us to award under protest?
That's also correct.
What is the substantial state interest that would justify that?
Well, I'm sure you don't want to hear that from me, the engineer, so I'm going to bring my departmental AAG, Doug Carey Beaver, up here to give you a very, very succinct response to that question. Thank you, Doug.
Douglas Carey Beaver, I'm Assistant Attorney General and Principal Counsel for the Department of Information Technology. Are we going to talk about the protest, or are you just interested in the substantial interest?
Well, I'm concerned that, according to the Secretary, the federal deadline for whatever it is, the thing that we have to be in line for is January of 2012. Was that your testimony?
Yes.
What's the substantial state interest in suggesting that, you know, we not allow ARINC to have its day in court, consider its appeal before the Maryland State Board of Contract Appeals? Why shouldn't we defer this until the Board of Contract Appeals is ruled?
As well, as I understand it, the Federal Communications Commission has regulations that require that the state certify that it is providing or prepared to provide substantial service to one-third of the population by January 1st, 2012, and then later certify the state is prepared to provide substantial service to two-thirds of the population by January 1st, 2017. And the concern is that if that is not, that January 1, 2012 threshold is not met, the 700 megahertz license would be pulled by the FCC.
Right. That was the previous testimony. I guess I would ask my colleagues to defer this until, consider deferring it until the Board of Contract Appeals rules on it. Because January 2012 is, you know, I'm sleepy right now, but it sure isn't just around the corner. So why not?
Maybe I can back up a little bit. This is the second protest that was filed by Aaron. The first protest was filed in April of this year.
Mm-hmm.
They had a number of issues that they withdrew from that protest, and they kept the issues they kept were they claimed the state had improperly evaluated Aaron's proposal by using criteria not specified in the solicitation. They failed to have meaningful discussions. On October 7th, the Board of Contract Appeals heard the state's motion to dismiss and dismissed that protest. I mean, there was no grounds for that whatsoever. So
I'm sorry, give me the dates again.
The protest was filed April 2010, and October 7th, the Board of Contract Appeals.
Okay, so that was 6 months for a wide series of questions that were raised by...
Actually, it was a very... When that became a very narrow series of questions that was raised.
Okay, so it became a narrow... This, I take it, this protest would be even narrower. So why not give the ARINC, local company, Maryland, the opportunity to exercise their day in court on whatever it is they're objecting to, and, you know, get back to us within whatever... You know, you can comment to the Board of Contract Appeals that's already looked at this
on other issues, but you know, you have a time sensitive situation. But I would not feel comfortable, and don't feel comfortable in any event, us, the Board of Public Works, moving forward in the face of a protest, be it the first or second.
Well, I guess I two things. One is that the next proceeding may take as long. I would expect it would probably take at least 4 months, maybe 6 months, to proceed through that same process. That's typically the length of a protest. The Board of Contract Appeals, I've appeared before them for almost 14 years now. And second, just as the first protest the board found didn't have merit, I believe that this second protest doesn't have merit either. They're claiming that this late modification to Motorola's proposal doesn't comply with Maryland law, and they asked for another opportunity to have an evaluation of that protest.
Well, if so black and white, why wouldn't you just let the Board of Contract Appeals deal with it and come back to us? If worst case it took 6 months, we still have, you know, that's 6 months in advance of the federal deadline.
We need to speak then.
But the process, I think, can then people get out a little more confidence in it.
Yeah, just to be clear with respect to calendar, from now to January 2012 is approximately 14 months. A project of this type requires significant engineering or deployment of equipment. The testing alone is several months. So what I would say to you is, we try to award this March time frame and got caught in the protest cycle. And where we are today is, if we do not hit the ground almost immediately, I just don't see how, in fact, we could have a chance to meet that January 2012 date.
Elise, could I just ask a question about
that? Sure.
We have something here that says that the grants were extended by contract and will remain available until expended through fiscal year 2012, which isn't... Do you know anything about that?
The grants?
This is actually from your interoperability director. PSIC grants were extended by Congress.
Right. So, as you know, the source of the funding is coming from several different areas. One is a public safety interoperability grant. I'm sorry if I don't know exactly the name. Right. So, we actually had an opportunity to extend that in terms of the grant. The licensing, which is controlled by the FCC, is a different ballgame.
Okay.
They've been pretty emphatic about those dates. So that's what we're really up
against. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So it's still January 1st, not the end of the fiscal year.
That's for the licensing. January 2012.
Let me just clarify. So in response to the comptroller's question, the substantial state interest is time. And putting that time, that 13 and a half months, to good use to ensure that we meet the January 12 first deadline.
That's correct. Okay. That's absolutely correct.
That's the justification, if you will, meeting
that's
the
correct.
Standard for the your request for the board to take action, notwithstanding a big protest.
Right, and understand that we've based everything to date based on the 700 megahertz licensing. If in fact we were to, lose that,
mm-hmm.
Then the project, the proposal, the design, the concept, it all kind of goes out the door. I'm not saying that someday you couldn't build a statewide, say, system, but it surely would not be on the foundation that, in fact, we've built what we are going to do.
Well, let me just...
Could I just, Mr. Jolivet, before you come back, because you're on a separate, and I support our MBE goals, and I also support interoperability, as the treasurer noted at earlier meetings.
I was in the legislature in a position where we were very supportive of this. My concern here, though, is that we're establishing a precedent which could work against us and work against the taxpayers down the road. To say that the substantial interest is timing, I mean, that's true for any contract. Any contract can be held up to have, timing issues. I don't understand the situation with the FCC. I'm not an expert on that, but I can't imagine that if we entered into a contract in July of next year to move forward, that would not fulfill our or their request that we make a commitment to the 700 megahertz. But that's a technical issue. My concern here is that we're moving forward in the face of a protest, and that's a bad precedent for us. I've mentioned that before, and I don't see a reason for us adding to that bad precedent by moving forward. I'd really like to have my colleagues defer this until and be happy to send a letter from the board to the Board of Contract Appeals if there is some calendar issues involved, and to the extent they can look at this expeditiously, they should. But to just go ahead and award it and essentially reduce them to their stature is, and also establish this as a precedent for other contracts, I think is wrong. Don't you agree?
Well, my recommendation is that if we need to build, or if it is the goal of the administration to build an interoperable 700 megahertz wireless interoperability system, we need to act today. And again, I mean, I defer to the will of the board. But what I want to do is the best job in having to bring forward my recommendation and the options that we have.
Yeah, let me just speak to the timeliness. I mean, I agree with the comptroller in that, you have more experience on the board than I do, but, the vast majority of contracts that come before us do have some time sensitivity to them. However, where I disagree with the comptroller is that some contracts, if we don't move by date certain, put us in greater jeopardy than others. And I think I take at face value what the Secretary is saying, that if we don't meet a January 2012 deadline, we forfeit a license and then requires us to, seek another license or a different megahertz or what have you, that's a greater jeopardy than a lot of the other, than many other contracts that if we don't move, that if we were to delay it, the hardship that creates. So I don't think that all delays are created equal, or all postponements are created equal, and I don't think that all deadlines are the same or have the same significance. So here, certainly on this issue of moving forward, notwithstanding a bid protest, I'm certainly willing to act on this today, notwithstanding a bid protest, because of the jeopardy that we would be in if we don't meet the January deadline. And I think that you need all the time that you can get to make sure that we stand up a system. Mr. Jalvet, I see you're interested in commenting to the board.
Yeah, in closing, I thought it was extremely important that I remind the board, that I highlight for the board that originally, I note that this communication to the board asserts that the value of the contract work relating to subscriber equipment is not included in the MBE participation goal. I think it's important that this board be apprised that this was not an issue before. The question as to what was in the MBE goal never came up as an issue. And what I see here is an attempt on the part of the agency to make it easy for Motorola to meet the goal. And we shouldn't be involved in that. The agency should let Motorola sink or swim on its own and not contrive the goal. And that's what's happened here, Governor. There is a deliberate, organized, concerted effort here on the part of the procurement agency to favor Motorola. Give an example, another example, to allow Motorola to meet the goal with 11.62 achievement, presumably with African American participation. Certainly, there was no African American at all before. But I say this to you because this board would have to be blind not to see what's going on in terms of how this agency is not living up to its requirement or expectation of enforcing the MBE law vigilantly and with integrity. And there is no integrity here to what this agency is doing. The last thing that I would like to mention to this board and ask this board in this wisdom. We know that, I've mentioned this before, so I'm not going to, we know that there are two firms that Motorola is contracting with for the minority participation for the 13.2. These firms go all around the country. These are basically firms that are captive Motorola firms. They are not legitimate minority firms. We should not buy into that. I would like the board, before the board approves this contract, to make one of our agencies, MDOT, to investigate the relationship here. There's a captive relationship. Every contract Motorola gets in Maryland, they use these same agencies, these same contractors. I would submit that that is inappropriate. That's simply not appropriate. Now, let me close. I know that there are people who take issue with what I say, but I say it nonetheless because it's true. The last thing I'd like to say is that I note that here Motorola is proposing to give $47 million to an MBE from Georgia, from the state of Georgia, that has no ties at all in Maryland. Now, I would say, Mr. Controller, the state of Maryland has no compelling legal interest to give an MBE preference to an out-of-state firm. It's pretty well admitted that, yes, the state of Maryland would have a compelling legal justification to give a legal, give an MBE preference to a Maryland MBE firm. But why are we giving a $47 million MBE contract to a Georgia firm when we are not doing the same for our Maryland firms? Something is wrong with that. Something is wrong with that, and I call upon this board to correct it.
Okay, can we have, thank you very much. Can you, Mr. Secretary, just summarize sort of the MBE component this award? Can you just summarize, you know, what we've got here?
Sure. So, to the point about the radios not being a part of the calculation, fair disclosure, in May of 2008, procurement advisory group, or the group that happened to determine the goal, made that decision at that time that because the radios were specifically manufactured equipment that would not be included in the goal. So there was no change in terms of how we did approach that. So the goal was set at 12%. Again, I would maintain that all of the rules were followed in response to that. The contractor happened to propose 13% MBE participation. In that, there was no African-American participation, but as a result of the activity that has occurred over the past 6 weeks, Motorola has come forward voluntarily, and on top of their 13%, has included or increased by 7% MBE African-American participation. And if I may just add one more point. Not all IT contracts are the same. Some have more IT human service. In this particular contract, there's a lot of equipment and gear. On the agenda today, we have an item for a computer-aided dispatch system. The value of that contract is potentially $34 million. There is a 25% MBE goal on that, and actually there is 100% female African-American participation. So, that's a good news sort of story, but just want to point out that, based on the nature of the contract, we try to do what we can to end up with the right result.
And on the item three, what is the nature of the performance by the MBEs, all 20%? Can you describe what that is for this item three?
Sure. So, if in fact that we look at the two original firms, they will be doing some technical work in terms of bi-directional amplifiers in tunnels and console equipment installation services. There is another firm of the original that will be doing engineering type of assignments. In the 7% that has been added, that will be supported by the three new firms making up the 7% African-American participation. One firm will be doing real estate management services. One firm will be doing training services. And another one will be providing equipment installation, project management, and engineering services. So it's a vast array of, again, talent and services that will be comprised in this group.
Mr. Comptroller?
Yes, I have a request of the board that we defer this item for 2 weeks and ask our procurement advisor, Ms. Childs, to get back to us in writing as to whether, in your opinion, the a bid protest is substantive. That's number one. And number two, whether the deadline of January 2012 is something that would preclude us from any further delay or action. And I'm not sure whether you're willing to do that, but I'd certainly like to ask my board members to join me in that because, as I said, I think there's a precedent here that we need to protect ourselves from. In 2 weeks, I take it, would not, where the Assistant Attorney General went, but I take it 2 weeks would not jeopardize the January 2012 situation.
The concern I have with that request, and you can certainly make it, is twofold. One is on, the procurement advisor offering such a dispositive opinion about the merits of a case before the Board of Contract Appeals. I'm not really, I'm a little uncomfortable with that, and I don't know if in 2 weeks, if it takes six, even 4 months for the Board of Contract Appeals to dispose of the case, whether you can even do that in 2 weeks, and even if you could.
Not to interrupt, I'm just asking.
If I can just address the two. And in terms of substantive, I mean, I'm going to assume that it is substantive because it was filed, and we're assuming that there are that cases that are filed are substantive, they have merit, and whether they win or lose is a decision made by the Board of Contract Appeals. But I have concerns with the procurement advisor advising on that. And then I also have concerns with the procurement advisor coming back with an opinion as to whether or not the substantial state interest test has been made. And I think it's based on some complex factual set of facts, whether or not you can do certain engineering feats within a time certain and what the other hurdles are. And while I don't think that capability resides only in the department,
I don't know if it necessarily resides with the procurement advisor. So those are my concerns about what you are asking the procurement advisor to do for the board, and whether you can even do that in 2 weeks.
Well, I guess I have to appeal to the treasurer then, because I would I think it's a modest request. I think I have more confidence than the lieutenant governor in our procurement advisor threading through those.
Well, comptroller, I'm sorry,
giving us.
Don't put your trust in me. As much as I do admire you, I would add to the Lieutenant Governor's concern, I mean, quite clearly the procurement, you may ask the procurement advisor whatever you wish, and any of us can, but also in terms of the deadline, I mean, clearly we don't have to make the deadline, but presumably we don't get the license, and then the question of what happens if we don't get the license is really not a procurement issue. It's an issue of how we deal with interoperability, present interoperability of emergency communications, which I think is a terribly, terribly important problem. The other thing is this will be precedent in this particular area, but it's certainly not the first time the board has acted. What is required of the board and the process that's set out by the board is for the board members to satisfy themselves that there is a pressing state interest needed to move forward, and clearly, I mean, it sounds like one of us have not been persuaded of that, at least one of us has. The Board of Contract Appeals will continue as long as the appeal is before it, and will have to deal with the situation if the Board of Contract Appeals acts contrary to the way you anticipate they will act, but this doesn't stop them from acting, nor, I assume, would it stop an appeal to the Circuit Court beyond the Board of Contract Appeals. I'm not a lawyer, but my recollection is that there is that process. I have to admit I was persuaded. We did defer it at the request of some board members 2 weeks already. I'm ready. I think we should go ahead and then see what the Board of Contract Appeals does. But I just think we've been waiting for years to develop this system, and there now is a deadline. We can miss it again. We can keep punting. We can keep kicking the can down the road a bit. But I wish we wouldn't.
Okay. Well, I regret that we're in this situation once again. It seems we're always here. Someone has a shotgun up against us saying, you know, if you don't act, these bad things will happen. And looks like I'll be in the minority here. But if I could ask our procurement advisor, what would be the impact of the Board of Contract Appeals ruling in favor of the protester? After we move forward and approve this.
With the caveat that anything I say would be pure speculation, there might be a number of remedies they would suggest. You know, there has been some argument that what has been proposed by Motorola is in fact another best and final offer. Perhaps a remedy suggested by the Board of Contract Appeals, if ARINC is successful, would be that ARINC would be afforded an opportunity for an additional best and final offer. But again, everything is very speculative as to what the board may decide. But that's kind of been the genesis of much of the argument, and that may be a remedy they would suggest.
Thank you, and just I will move to defer this for 2 weeks for all the many reasons that I went into, and I will appreciate the patience of my colleagues. I know this is going over territory we've covered before, but this is a big contract, and it's a complex one, and there are legitimate concerns.
Could I just also add, talking about territory we've gone over, one of, I think, strong benefits of having gone over it and deferring it was we now, it is now quite clear that you all are coming back
for the next chunk, and that it's going to be looked at in a rational step-by-step process that was not completely clear in the beginning. And right. I think that's an important change.
All right. And not that I want to be a shell in that shotgun, but I just got to remind that, you know, the first time we came here, although it was hasty, was October 20th, I believe. So a month has gone by in a schedule that is only 14 months. Then it was really 15 months. So every does have some impact. What I would tell you is, you know, we really need to get working in the ground as soon as we can.
Okay, any further discussion, comments, questions from the board members on this item number 3? Hearing none, the Lieutenant Governor moves approval. Seconded by the...
I believe I made a motion to defer.
Oh, I'm sorry, we need to act on that motion. Is there a second on the motion? Okay, hearing none, is there a motion for... is there a motion? Lieutenant Governor moves approval, seconded by the Treasurer for item number 3. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? On 2-1, item number 3 is approved. The remainder of the agenda for the Department of Information Technology, are there any questions or comments by the members? Hearing none, the Treasurer moves approval of 1 and 2, item number 1 and 2, seconded by the Treasurer. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the remainder of the Department of Information Technology agenda is approved. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you.
And we will now go back to the University System of Maryland.
Good morning. Joe Evans, representing the University System of Maryland. We have 5 items on the agenda today. Here to answer any questions.
Speak to item number 5. I'm pretty excited about that one.
Okay, I'd like to bring up Mr. George Schulenberger, the Vice President for Administration, University of Maryland, University College.
Good morning. We're asking approval here for the purchase of a building directly across the street from our current Largo Academic Center. The university is experiencing tremendous growth. We've grown 34% in the past 5 years in terms of stateside enrollment. So we're constantly needing to look for space. This building is very attractive. It's right across the street. We can fold into the Largo complex pretty easily. So we appreciate your support on this. Do you have any other questions on it?
Any other questions or comments on any of the items on the University System agenda? Thank you. Okay, hearing none, the Treasurer moves approval. Second, hearing none, University System of Maryland's agenda approved. And next we will move to the Department of Transportation. Good morning.
Good morning. For the record, I'm Harold Bartlett. I'm presenting 21 items today. Item 2C has been previously withdrawn. And for the record, items 8M and 3DP have been previously revised.
Any questions or comments? Concerns, issues by any board members?
Just to mention and to ask you to take back to headquarters the energy performance contract,
yes,
item number 3.
Yes,
I understand in the beginning there were some difficulties working it out, and just in terms of roles, and I appreciate having finally worked it out, and I hope in the future things can run more smoothly. I'm sure we'll be hearing from the secretary if they don't.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Just ask, where is the secretary?
The secretary is actually in Seattle now.
Okay. If there's nothing further on the Department of Transportation's agenda, the treasurer moves approval. Seconded by the comptroller. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none. And that agenda is approved for today. And the final agenda is for the Department of General Services. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Lieutenant Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. The Department of General Services has 31 items on our agenda. Items 3, 5, 6, and 19 have been revised. I'd be glad to answer any questions you have.
Could I just go back? I'm sorry, just to one request of the department.
These
herbicide contracts that we see so often, herbicide, pesticide, we have some indication, a sentence, that someone has looked at the question of the adverse environmental impact and is satisfied that there isn't any. I had thought we had been seeing them, and all of a sudden I just noticed flipping over that it wasn't there.
I know there's consideration to what materials are applied based on where they are.
I'm quite sure there is that process, but I think to put it on the record. I'm sorry, Mr.
Speaker.
So are there any questions, comments, items, issues for the Department of General Services agenda? Okay, hearing none, seeing none. The comptroller moves approval, seconded by the treasurer. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none. The DGS agenda is approved for today, and I'll move for adjournment. Is that appropriate? Right, seconded by the comptroller. We're done. Thank you.
I don't know what happens if you don't.